welcome to the Inside College Hockey Podcast as we recap the NCAA regionals and preview the Frozen Four. Our four teams are set after this weekend's regional play. Of course, they are Maine, Boston College, Michigan State, and North Dakota. And Michigan State and Maine will meet in the early semifinal in St. Louis in a couple of Thursdays' time as we record this on March 26, 2007, live from St. Louis. Well, actually, we're not in St. Louis, but we're going to talk about St. Louis, so we might as well say that we're there. Welcome in our distinguished panel, full staff of guys who saw regionals this weekend and have a lot to talk about, so we'll get right into the conversation. And let's start in Denver, where certainly a lot of the conversation came out of with some wild games and some top-notch hockey between Minnesota and North Dakota yesterday. Bus, we'll start with you and your thoughts on that game. First, about how those WCHA powerhouses survived and then what they did on Sunday.
Well, Minnesota survived Air Force on Saturday because they played hard for 5 minutes and got three goals. Minnesota, if people watch that game, I think most people would agree that that Air Force thoroughly outplayed Minnesota for 55 of 60 minutes, and it just so happened that the 5 minutes in the third period where Minnesota, really bore down and started crashing the net and getting those big bodies in front of the net and making things happen via rebound or getting in front of the goalie and making life difficult for the Air Force defenseman. It was three goals, and I think somebody figured it out, actually. It was 209 seconds. So that's how Minnesota advanced. The North Dakota-Michigan game, you don't see many of those in at any level of hockey, really. It was it certainly was a goaltender's duel, that's for certain. Neither Billy Sauer from Michigan nor Felipe Lamoureux of North Dakota was real sharp over the first period in 5 minutes. But, credit to Lamoureux. He recovered and over the last, pretty much the last two periods, played really, really well and, put everything that happened behind him and shut out Michigan for the rest of the way. And, he made a couple of really nice saves, I think, that not only helped his confidence, but also really gave his team a lift, too. One was a breakaway, on a shorthanded breakaway from T.J. Hensick that he stopped him. And then he stopped Kevin Porter on a power play on a breakaway. So, he really stepped up in a game where one of those two goalies really needed to assert themselves and take control and allowed North Dakota to advance. And the Sunday's game, I thought that the better team won. I can't say enough about North Dakota's effort. Yesterday, they thoroughly frustrated Minnesota for the better part of the game by really making life difficult for them, not allowing them to really move the puck out of their own end, not allowing those defensemen to make good, crisp passes, and not allowing those forwards to get into space for the long bombs that they like to do, and then get into transition and go. They played a good, physical, fundamentally sound game, and the end result was that they won. And I think that North Dakota clearly deserved to win. I think they were the better team. All four lines played well and did and contributed to the team's success. And defensively, I thought that their defensemen played very sound in their own end. We didn't see the offense, I think, that we maybe expect from those guys, but I think in their own end they were very good and really did a good job of keeping Minnesota's forwards out of Lamoureux's face.
Let me take some time here to introduce our panel. I guess I never did that. Jess Myers
It's all right.
is joining us from St. Louis. Jeff Howe is also joining us from St. Louis. And Nate Ewell is in St. Louis. And I am Joe Gladyszewski, also in St. Louis. Jeff, you were in Manchester, New Hampshire, mere hours ago. And I think you had a team there in Boston College that was clearly the team that took care of business the best. They had the least challenge in getting to the Frozen Four of any of the four finalists. People expected that because they came into the tournament with such momentum. How did they get it done?
Well, I mean, BC just kept going what they've had going since early February. I mean, they've been playing great, scoring goals, and getting great goaltending out of Schneider. And it was evidenced again this week, and Schneider was the regional's most outstanding player. He allowed one goal, had another shutout, shut out Miami for the second straight year in the tournament. And, you know, they were clearly the superior team of the four teams in that bracket. And they took care of business. And they got lucky, honestly, on Sunday afternoon. They ran into a Miami team that is a lot better than a lot of people think they are. I mean, Miami, the way Miami plays defense is extremely impressive. That was probably the thing that stuck out most about the weekend in Manchester was Miami's defense and, you know, how strong they are at the back end. In front of Zatkoff, it was also very impressive. But, you know, BC found itself in a scoreless game going into the second period, and they were getting outplayed, you know, thoroughly outplayed through the first period, and then 5 minutes into the second, or actually 3 minutes into the second when Rooney put that first one home. But, you know, if I were a BC fan in Manchester on Sunday, I would have been really scared of my team's chances over the first 23 minutes because, you know, BC really got outplayed. They were getting it taken to them, and that was the first stretch. I mean, I've seen a lot of BC's winning streak, and that was the first stretch of, you know, 20 or so minutes that another team has really, really taken it to them. And I think that was good for BC more than anything, because if they take a period off against North Dakota in the Frozen, then they're going to find themselves going home on Thursday night instead of, you know, Saturday. So I think that first period was huge. Joe Rooney had the spotlight on him again for the second straight year in the regional final. And, you know, it's always somebody new for, I mean, not new, but it can be any one of their top six forwards who steps up and has a huge game. And it was Rooney's turn on Saturday. I mean, if it's not Ferriero or Gerby or Bradford or Boyle back on the blue line, you know, it's Rooney or, you know, Matt Green or just, I mean, anybody. It's scary what they're bringing to the table right now, the way that they can play. And, I mean, yeah, they took care of business. And I think if you looked at the four regions, you know, North Dakota and Minnesota were, you know, the two top teams out west. So you'd say, obviously, North Dakota took care of business, but they weren't the odds-on favorite to, you know, come out of that region, you know, as much as BC was here or as North Dakota was, or as Notre Dame was supposed to be in Michigan, or as, you know, although the field in Rochester was wide open. So, you know, BC was the one team that really, really took care of business this weekend.
Tell me about the Saturday game between Miami and New Hampshire. UNH had a large shot advantage in that game, but was Miami very strong? How were those chances?
A lot of the chances were from the outside. Miami really played great on the inside in their zone, and they limited a lot of UNH's really strong chances. UNH poured it on in the final, you know, in the couple final few minutes of the game, but by then it was almost too late for them. I mean, you knew going into this weekend the UNH was a team that was in trouble. I mean, I don't think anybody truly expected them to lose to Miami. I think a lot of people knew it was possible if they didn't show up that, you know, Miami definitely could beat them. But there were a lot of surprised people in Manchester on Saturday afternoon when UNH bowed out early. Like I said, Miami's defense was great, but they got help from a couple quirky little goals. I mean, the first goal was clean, but the pass that went from, I think it was Jones to Davis, or it was Davis to Jones. It was one of those ways. Bounced off the net right out to Jones up front, or Davis, whoever it was, and, you know, he just banged it home. And then their second goal to go up 2-0 was banked off of Chris Murray's skate, who was playing defense right out in front of the crease, and it just went through Regan's five hole. So, you know, they go up 2-0. All of a sudden, BC is shocked in front of what's, you know, largely a home crowd, and they're battling from behind. And you know what? If you're facing a 2-0 deficit, unless you're Minnesota, you usually have a lot of trouble coming back in these NCAA tournament games. And, you know, I think the general feeling going into the third period was, okay, you know, UNH is finally going to wake up. UNH is going to come out. They're going to put at least a goal or two on the board, and they're going to win this thing. If not in the third period, they'll win it in overtime, because that's what UNH is going to do. And, you know, I think it was like 47 seconds into the third period that Miami got that great bounce off of Murray's skate. And all of a sudden they're up 2-0. And the way that Miami played defense this weekend, like I said before, I don't think there was anybody in the building who thought that once UNH fell behind 2-0, they were really going to be able to generate that offense to score the two goals to tie the game up. So, and even the goal that they did score was an unbelievable play by Mike Raja, who, you know, slipped between two defensemen and then fell down and flipped it over Zatkoff's pads, you know, as he was falling down with one hand. So, I mean, it was UNH was getting booed very loudly by its home crowd there on Saturday afternoon.
And it sounds like Miami had a lot to do with that. So kudos to Coach Blasi and his Redhawks staff. They're a team like Maine, who had come into the tournament as one of the last at-large teams to get into the field and had some time off. But they stayed focused and played well. Obviously, Maine played well on two nights and got back to the Frozen Four. Not something we should be surprised by, as Nate and I discussed earlier this weekend before the podcast. And Jess, I know you talked about it last year. It seems like every time you look up, there's Maine in another Frozen Four.
You got to be impressed by the run they've been on. I'm impressed by the run they've been on, and I don't know Maine that well. You know, I saw them the opening game of the season when they came here to St. Paul and beat Minnesota. I came back to St. Paul. Of course, I'm in St. Louis now, but they're an impressive team. I mean, I saw this weekend, you know, just watching them on TV, I saw what I had seen back in October. You know, Ben Bishop being dominant, and Michelle Levie, as they call him in Rochester, you know, playing great offense. And, you know, having seen them at the beginning of the season, not the end of the season, I don't know how that team was ever down and out in the Hockey East race, because I missed that kind of donut in the middle where they didn't play so well.
Maine is, you know, obviously a team that we talked about this last week. Maine was dominant in the first nine games of the season. They looked easily like the best team in the country. And, you know, they were playing great hockey, and they were beating great teams. But, you know, as they flailed off and then had the injury to Bishop, you know, everybody kind of counted them out. But with Bishop on that team, they are a much, much different group when Bishop is playing well. And, you know, that team is as talented as anybody in the country, as we saw earlier in the season. That wasn't a fluky nine-game stretch when they went 8-0-1. I mean, they were 8-0-1 for a reason. They beat North Dakota twice in Minnesota. So, I mean, Maine was a team that, you know, I think a lot of people had counted them out and kind of written them off, but they had a good draw in their bracket. And if they ended up out west against some of those other teams, who knows what would have happened. Maybe they would have been bounced early. But this is a good, good Maine team, and I wouldn't be surprised if Maine won the national championship, just, you know, because they have the experience, they have the offense, they do play well on defense when they decide to show up, and they've got a goalie who, you know, took them to the Frozen Four last year. And, you know, Maine definitely can do a lot more damage than it's already done.
You bring up a good point, Jeff, on the bracket. And I think that was one, you know, and it's easy to say this in retrospect, but I think even going in, people thought, okay, the toughest teams in this first weekend would be Minnesota, North Dakota, and probably Boston College. But what was it, and Gladdy, from your experience seeing it Friday, what was it about that bracket that set up well for Maine?
Well, I think that the familiarity with Massachusetts and getting Bishop back for those games on Saturday's regional final were both huge keys. Maine was motivated, and Maine had, as most people will recall, had lost four straight games to UMass all in the late part of the year, all in the month of March, I believe, the last two weekends before the Hockey East Championship. And now they got Bishop back. He's their guy. He's their number one goalie. And they had that to prove. And I think they probably learned, Tim Whitehead said, Maine or Massachusetts has made us a better team, you know, which is a compliment to the Minutemen. The other thing that's set up was that they're playing a St. Cloud team and a Clarkson team that, or they didn't play Clarkson, but the rest of that region had teams that were pretty strong, but not tournament tested, and St. Cloud came in kind of struggling as well. They lost two games at the Final Five the weekend before. Bob Motzko and the Huskies, their reaction after the Maine loss was that they had never seen that before. It's hard to make adjustments when you don't know what you're adjusting to because they've never seen this all year. They've never seen Bobby Gepfert let in two, like, goals on, you know, behind-the-net plays. They hadn't seen their power play so out of whack. They hadn't seen their penalty killing so out of whack. And things were just so backward or off-center for St. Cloud that night, and Maine capitalized. I think that goes... That speaks a little bit to postseason experience and being prepared for that situation. The Massachusetts-Clarkson game, as most people will recall, got the tournament off to a flying start. Everybody locked in on Friday afternoons around the nation, watching a thriller between two aggressive and talented teams. And then it just worked out that way. You know, sure, if Michigan had been in that regional, maybe they'd come out of it, whereas they didn't come out of the first round out in Denver or Notre Dame, you know, or even Miami the way they played. I think that region, the Rochester regional, proved what the current status of college hockey is, that there are, at any one time, two or three elite teams, and then everyone else is really good. And then you've got, you know, then there's not much to decide between that. And when we talk about those two or three elite teams, if those right now are North Dakota, BC, and, say, Minnesota, you know, in December, it was probably, you know, Michigan, Notre Dame, and St. Cloud, you know. And the fact that those three elite teams have changed, and you got Maine early in the season, and, you know, BU around Beanpot time, you know, looked really good. So you get these teams that are really all pretty much the same. And then at any one time, a few teams will emerge. Maine has a knack for emerging at the right time, which is when April starts.
Yeah, and I just want to say one more thing about Maine. I mean, what should make them even scarier, they have 12 days off in between games. And who do you think is going to benefit more than Ben Bishop, who needs that rest, you know, to get his groin back in better shape than it was last weekend? I mean, I guarantee you he wasn't at 100%. So, you know, another 12 days to get this kid that much, you know, 12 days healthier is something that, you know, Michigan State is you know, they're not benefiting from the 12 days off. And you've got a Maine, you know, Maine just scored... I'm having a brain cramp here. Maine can score. You know, they've got Josh Soares, Michelle Levier, and Teddy Purcell, who are three of the, you know, most talented offensive players in the country. And, you know, a healthier Bishop against a Michigan State team that at times has had trouble scoring this year. Maine could very well find itself playing for the national championship. And, I mean, I would, you know, obviously I'm the Hockey East writer here, and I've seen Maine countless times when I haven't seen Michigan State play in person, but I would favor Maine in that matchup right now.
I think you have to.
Well, and you know what? I was just going to point out that we're going to hear this ad nauseum over the next 2 weeks, but since we're here in St. Louis, this town is abuzz over Ben Bishop coming back, and you got to imagine that he's going to be excited too.
Well, he's got to face a lot of that, though. You know, after that morning skate on Wednesday and Thursday, it's the same questions from the same lazy reporters. How does it feel to be back in St. Louis? Well, feels fine. Thank you. I play for Maine.
It feels like Milwaukee, only the arena's a little further south. I mean, yeah. But, you know, getting back to and I guess we're kind of segueing into the, I guess that first semifinal, but I think you know, Maine, to me, the two things that set them apart is naturally their experience, and not just their experience in Frozen Four situations, but just, you know, they got these older guys who've been through it all, and Gladdy, we talked a little bit about this over the weekend. You know, it's tournament time, and here comes Hamilton again playing well. Shepherd played well for them, and, you know, obviously Soares and Levier. And,
I liked Lundin a lot back on defense.
Yep.
Their defense does not get enough credit.
Yeah, they've got some good. I mean, Brett Tyler's a very good defenseman, and Lundin, like you mentioned, and Duffy was good, and he scored a goal, I think, on Saturday. You know, they've got that experience, and I think the other thing that kind of maybe gets lost in the shuffle about Maine is that they always seem to be a very opportunistic team. They really capitalize on other teams' mistakes.
The power play was dynamite. Oh, man, it was dynamite all weekend.
It's the number one power play in the country. I mean, I saw that power play four times in Amherst over the, you know, the first two weekends of March. That is an unbelievable power play. It's really scary to watch. They move the puck, I mean, so fast. And a lot of their power play goals, I mean, if you watch it, they're not, I mean, they were scored from the pass. They weren't scored necessarily from the shot. I mean, these guys move the puck, you know, through the slot, you know, as fast as any team I've seen this season. You know, a lot of their goals are with the goalie completely out of position, and all they need to do is get the guy shooting to just put the thing on net. It's a scary, scary power play.
Sorry to interrupt you, boss, but yeah,
go ahead.
I agree with you that they are opportunistic, and they're a good club. Let's talk about the Spartans. I mean, we've talked about the other four teams and how great they are, so we might as well pump the tires of the good old Michigan State University Spartans a little bit. I know, Jess, you watched some of those games on TV from the comforts of your recliner.
Yeah, boy, and I, you know, being here in St. Louis, I miss the recliner. That's one thing you just don't get.
He bought a lawn chair.
Yeah, I'm actually in my hotel room right now. I'm putting together an Adirondack chair I bought on eBay, and I had it shipped here to the hotel, and the concierge was good enough to get me a couple of screwdrivers and stuff, so that'll be all up and running real soon. But anyway, impressive performance by the Spartans. Most of all, I thought, in that first game against Boston University, because the Terriers came out in the first period, maybe period and a half, and looked like, you know, they had some swagger. I mean, they looked like, hey, we're here for real. We're wearing the white sweaters. We're the experienced team. You know, all those jokes about the beanpot, whatever, you know, that we play our Frozen Four in February. I mean, BU really looked like, you know, they were the alpha dogs there, no pun intended. And for Michigan State to be able to turn that around, get the crowd, whatever of it there was, on their side, and you know, get a couple quick goals in the second period and turn that game around, I guess that's what impressed me most about them this weekend. You know, they were able to clamp down in the final and play defense and keep Notre Dame off the board and advance. But that first game, you know, to win 5-1 against a BU team that I guess expected a little bit more from, and we saw a lot more from in that first period, and then it all just kind of petered out. But nice win for Rick Conley. I mean, the last time I saw him coach a game in Grand Rapids, he had a complete no-show in the 2004 regional there and looked like he was ready to cut all 20 players and start anew. So nice rally for him and for his program.
That UMD game, the 5-0 game against Michigan State, definitely came to mind as I'm watching that first 10 minutes of Michigan State against BU. I just thought the Terriers were going to run away with it and score more goals than they usually do. And
two.
All of a sudden they just scored this. All of a sudden they just got their average. They got their average and gave up about five times more than they usually do. So, you know, when Michigan State, I fell in love with that freshman line last year, which now is a sophomore line, and those guys played, it seemed like, every other shift last year in the tournament, and they picked right up again this year and at the same kind of pace in terms of amount of time they're on the ice, and they look even better with the year of experience, the Tim Kennedy, Crowder, and Abdelkader line. And they really carry that team from what I can see.
Those guys love to play around the blue paint, and I think Maine's forwards also love to play around the blue paint, especially Hamilton and Shepherd. You're going
I think we
might see some post-whistle altercations on next Thursday afternoon here in St. Louis.
And those forwards too, or I'm sorry, the defensemen for Maine. I mean, they've got some beef back there. I think that's going to be a really good hard physical contest, and if Jeff Lurg's not used to it by now, and I'm sure he is, he's probably going to see a lot of bodies in his way, from some of those main guys who are some of those bigger kids that they've got. You know, Rob Bellamy is probably going to be around the net a few times, guys like that. So I think that's probably going to be a pretty physical game, just based on the personnel. And I still like Maine in that game. I think they've got just a little bit more depth than Michigan State, and I like their defensemen a little bit better. But I guess I'm getting ahead of myself with
any of us subscribe to, and you've already heard murmurs of this, that night game Thursday night is the real national championship. I don't think any of us subscribe to that.
For Pete's sakes.
Sorry, Gladdy. I didn't mean to offend you. I've already heard that in a day.
Yeah, I know. But people, you heard that when you got off the plane in St. Louis, didn't you?
Yeah, no, I heard something about the St. Louis Cardinals pitching rotation, but...
Didn't the baggage handler tell you that? I thought for sure.
This is a sky cap.
Sky caps know it all, don't they?
It was all the buzz.
Yeah, buy low on Adam Wainwright in your fantasy leagues.
Just quickly back to Michigan State.
I'm glad you could join us for the podcast tonight. We're obligated with fantasy baseball drafts.
Before that Michigan State Maine game, we've got to do whatever we can to get our photographer to look for this. We've got to get a picture of Lurg and Bishop together, just for the Muggsy Bogues Minute Bowl aspect of it.
I was sad we weren't going to have that this year, and then all of a sudden, lo and behold, they're both there.
Yeah.
Indeed.
We had that last year.
Game in Albany last year was a real good game. They played in the regional final last year.
Great game.
So I'm expecting another good one next week. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to the night game also.
Yeah, the night game should be fairly decent, I'm thinking.
And I also heard, not even the night game in the Frozen is the national championship. I heard plenty of talk from those Westerners this weekend in Manchester that the Minnesota-North Dakota game was the real national championship.
Rook, I keep telling you, ignore people from west of Michigan.
Westerners.
I ignore people.
What are you, Horace Greeley? There's a lot of country beyond the Alleghenies there. I think Minnesota fans are... there was a lot of talk about that, and I think that obviously Minnesota-North Dakota was the matchup that most people wanted to see, and... It wasn't the national championship or the de facto national championship because Minnesota certainly, I think you can go back to maybe the last half of the regular season and then, they picked up their play a little bit for the final five. But to me, they just seem to lack some work ethic and some focus. And I thought they, in both games, I thought that they thought they could get by out-talenting people. And, that's not going to work, against the team. First of all, it almost didn't work against Air Force Saturday, but against a team like North Dakota, which has just as much talent, but also has those role players who do their jobs well and are really physical and really get in your face and make life difficult. To me, it seemed like Minnesota didn't really want – they wanted things to come easy, and when things didn't come easy, they started to get real frustrated. And, you know, Minnesota, I think they've got national championship talent, but from what I saw Sunday and Saturday even, they just didn't have a national championship work ethic. And I don't know.
Jess, you saw
I don't
the
know
Gophers all year.
That.
Jess, you saw the Gophers all year. Do you think that was the case with them? They kind of relied on their players rather than their effort. And do
I
you think that could have been caused by how easily things went for them through November and December and January?
Well, I made this point in a previous podcast, and I do think that. I think that things came too easily. October, November, December, when, you know, you're riding a, whatever it was, 19-game winning streak. You know, Oposo puts up 15 goals in the first half. I mean, I think they, as young as they were, maybe weren't prepared for the grind that the second half of the college hockey season, and specifically the second half of the WCHA season becomes, when, you know, points get a little tougher to come by and you start squeezing your stick a little bit more, and other cliches that I will spout out there. But one thing, you know, Boston, obviously you were in the building, and I was just a TV viewer via the magic of ESPNU, but I called Don Lucia after he returned from Denver just to kind of say thank you. I mean, he was very cooperative and very good with Inch this year, and was always good as far as access. And he's the kind of coach where, you know, you don't abuse it, but if you have to call him on his cell phone after practice to get something, he's generally good about giving that, you know. So I called just to say a thank you, and we chatted a little bit about the North Dakota game. Interesting take from him. He said, heading into the third period, he kind of thought that his top two lines, the top two Gopher lines, were playing North Dakota's top two lines to about a stalemate. And he said that he felt that the Gophers' third and fourth lines were maybe winning the battles against North Dakota's third and fourth lines. He thought that was looking like it would be an advantage for him in the third period and beyond if they went to overtime. According to Don, he thought the real turning point in the game was when Kyle Radke takes that five-minute major for checking from behind and is tossed from the game. Not only does Minnesota fail to score on that five-minute power play, which is a golden opportunity to take over the game, you know, you give North Dakota the momentum by killing that 5 minutes off. But he said what that changed was having Radke out of the lineup, Hakstol shifted and went mostly to just three lines. So now, you know, instead of dominating the third and fourth line, you don't have that advantage anymore if you're Minnesota. So that, he thought, made a difference down the stretch. And then obviously you get into overtime. Second game in two nights and high altitude and all that becomes a factor.
You know, this goes with, I mean, just about every sport, you know, across the board nowadays. You don't win national championships unless you have role players or at least guys who are willing to step into a smaller role for the good of the team. You can't win this thing with, you know, 12 individual forwards and six individual defensemen. I mean, you need guys who are willing to go into the corners and grind things out and, you know, just shut down the opposing first line instead of, you know, it's always nice to have, you know, 12 guys who are, you know, high NHL draft picks or whatever number Minnesota has. But these guys, you know, it's just like I said, it's like in any sport. You know, you saw with the Pistons a few years ago beating the Lakers, or, you know, the Patriots, the mighty, mighty New England Patriots. I think Minnesota is another classic case just like that, when they don't have the guys who were the natural role players that some of the teams that are still alive this weekend really have.
I just wanted to make another quick point about that. You know, looking at North Dakota, and I think just the difference between the two teams, Minnesota and North Dakota, and you know, for obvious reasons, it's easy to put those two together. Just, you know, geographically and with the number of draft picks they have on their team, it's easy to kind of put them side by side and compare. Looking at the two games of that North Dakota played, and picking out their best players, I thought their best forward all weekend was Porter. You know, regardless of how many, you know, they've got Oshie and Taves and Duncan and, you know, all these guys that can get up and down the ice and score. I thought Porter, who's a little bit more of a grinder, I thought he was their best forward. And, you know, they've got guys like Lee and Chorney on defense. I thought Joe Finley was their best defenseman. I thought he was really good. And, you know, I think he really set the tone for the game Sunday by he absolutely flattened Blake Wheeler late in the first period. I mean, just if it was football, it would have been called the de-cleater because he took him right off his feet. And, just, and Finley did not move. It was... you know, I think he really set the tone for kind of the rest of the game with that hit. And, you know, for those two guys, you know, who aren't maybe the headline grabbers, but just with the kind of style that they play playoff hockey, you know, defensive with a long stick, and a guy like Porter who's going to be out there killing penalties, obviously scores big goals, but, you know, he's a good checking forward and responsible defensively. I think maybe that speaks to the difference between North Dakota and Minnesota and why North Dakota is still playing in Minnesota's at home.
One other thing stood out for me. Oh, I'll make that other point quickly. Jeff, you mentioned that you had heard, and there was a lot of scuttlebutt, that Minnesota-North Dakota game was a national championship. And as you guys know, the NCAA did come out and say that they intentionally screwed the WCHA this week. No, they didn't. They didn't do that at all. What the heck?
It's a conspiracy.
It's a conspiracy against the WCHA.
We'll teach you for having an Indian nickname, they said.
They hate us.
They hate us.
Whoops, that didn't work out so well, did it?
Yeah, exactly. I was relishing the idea of North Dakota and Notre Dame both getting to the Frozen Four because on the official merchandise, you know, they make North Dakota use that interlocking ND logo instead of the Indian head that they prefer. So I was liking, you know, merchandise with two NDs on it. No, the yellowish one is Notre Dame, not the green one.
I thought you were just feeling belligerent and wanted two fightings.
Well, I thought Notre Dame didn't use fighting anymore, though. I thought they were just the Irish now.
Oh, really?
No.
Yeah, I think
Irish.
They have, for all intents and purposes, dropped the fighting from their nickname.
Boss?
I disagree. Circle gets the square.
Circle gets the square. Circle gets the square.
No, well, I think tomorrow when I'm fighting.
Tomorrow when I'm taking my jog down by the arch, I'll ask some people on the street and see what they think.
No fighting, or there is fighting in the Irish.
And you're not jogging anywhere.
Yeah, let's be honest.
Yeah.
But the point being that...
That's from here in St. Louis.
One of the statements of the weekend that kind of shocked me was in the press conference after the Massachusetts versus Clarkson game. I mean, I'm not even sure that Maine and St. Cloud had taken the ice for warm-ups yet. And some reporter, I believe it was a television reporter, so you know what you're getting from those guys, said to the UMass players, "Can you beat Maine again?" And I kind of jerked my head back and said, "Can they beat St. Cloud?" Talk about assumptions. I mean, that Hockey East self-assurance was pretty rampant in that press conference. Obviously, they ended up playing, but they were the two lowest-seeded teams. And great job by Maine to get the first two goals of that game against UMass. That was the key, absolutely the key.
Hey, get a lead on that. A great job by UMass to get that first goal against Clarkson.
It was going to come eventually. After enough dump and retreat hockey, it'll come.
Gladys, I like your term today. We were trading instant messages, and Gladys said something about a team playing La Mer. I love that term. As a guy who watches a lot of Minnesota Wild hockey, it's nice to just become a...
What's Did you
that?
Enjoy that game, Gladys?
Oh, it was fantastic.
I gotta say, I know that double overtime of the number one ranked team in the country against the 16 seed should be exciting, but I just wanted that Notre Dame Alabama Huntsville game to end. I just was not entertained.
It's like that Wisconsin Cornell game last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, that I can speak from experience. That was that was. In fact, it was funny because I not that long ago I read someplace someplace on the internet somebody rehashed that game and said it was a thrilling triple overtime game, and I said, well, you got half of that sentence right. It was triple overtime.
Yeah.
Thrilling.
Well, but on that topic, I thought the worst 20 minutes of hockey of the weekend that I saw was that second period between Minnesota and North Dakota. With the game tied 1-1, to see two teams with that much talent playing cautious, tentative hockey for 20 minutes was borderline unwatchable. I mean, that was bad.
You obviously missed the first 20 minutes of the North Dakota-Michigan game then.
Every face-off was a scoring chance.
Pretty much.
What zone it was in.
Pretty much. I mean, it got to the point where guys were just throwing the puck toward the net to see. I mean, you literally had a 50-50 chance. And, you know, I feel sorry for the poor kid, but Billy Sauer was absolutely awful for Michigan. There were cases where he got bad bounces and things like that, but then there were cases where he just was just god-awful. And I don't know how, you know, a school like Michigan, how do they not find a goaltender who's capable or adequate? I mean, he was terrible.
Yeah. Well, you know what?
Yeah, but you know what? Last week we were talking about how he's turned around and playing better lately.
Oh yeah, you know, yeah, and he has. But then you look at his numbers, and you know he's still got a goals against right around 3, and his save percentage is it was just a tick above 900 or 90%, I should say. But, I mean, you look back, and this is a school that's had Montoya, that's had Turco, that's had Shield. I mean, obviously, they had going back a ways, they've had a pretty good goaltending history, and all of a sudden,
Well, when you get guys to commit at 14 years old.
Yeah, there you go.
You're taking a chance that they're not going to pan out to be great players when they're 20.
And the problem
and I know Sauer wasn't one of those guys, but
no.
He was still relatively young.
The problem with goalies at Michigan is if a guy has a rough freshman year, it's going to be trouble for 3 years because Red Berenson just, you know, gets a goalie and plays him for 4 years straight and never even considers anyone else. So
yeah.
you're kind of stuck with him. Sorry.
Yeah, that's how it's been for sure.
You think those assistant coaches are on the road today looking at goaltenders?
Any USHL action tonight? Here's the other thing that stuck out to me about the regional championships weekend. 10 Hobie finalists were announced. 8 of them played in regionals. Scott Parse and David Jones obviously did not. But outside of Duncan and Nate Davis from Miami, the rest of them really had really shaky weekends. And in a year like this when Hobie candidates are pretty close, that they really could have stood out and made a name for themselves. Some guys really went in the tank.
Yeah.
I think if you look back through the years, I mean, there were some other I think the last time that there was maybe this much of a toss-up going into this weekend was, I think, Steve Reinprecht, Mike Motto's year. Sean Horkoff was a little in the mix then. And I really think Steve Reinprecht lost the Hobie that weekend because he lost to Mike Motto. And to your point, Gladys, somebody could have just grabbed this thing this weekend and really made an impression, but nobody did.
Absolutely, and especially the goaltenders. David Brown was the best of the three, but they needed double overtime to beat the 16th-seeded team or 15th-seeded team. And then he lost to Michigan State. Curry lost again, 5 goals against. Geffert lost, 4 goals against. So those guys really took a step back. I think they could have had a chance to have a goalie win this thing this year. Drew Bagnell was banged up, and St. Lawrence lost to Boston College. Not a big surprise there. Nate Davis and Duncan, we mentioned, were pretty good. T.J. Hensick had 3 points against North Dakota, but took a 10-minute misconduct penalty for chirping the ref. Hensick later said the ref was chirping him. But it takes a 10-minute penalty when you're one of the nation's leading scorer with 12 minutes left in the game.
Yeah, that's not not
exactly. He wanted to be well-rested. He wanted to be well-rested for that last big 2 minutes.
Yeah. He was.
He was.
But, yeah, that was...
And Bus, as you told me, Air Force really pulled off the upset, but Ian was pretty invisible in that game.
Yeah, he really was. In fact, I didn't notice him at all. I you know, when you have to make a point to look for a guy, his line mates were good, I thought. You know, I thought Ramsey was good.
I thought that second line of theirs was good.
You know, their third and fourth line guys really played well, and you know, we could kind of get back to what we talked about with Minnesota and North Dakota. You know, those guys were winning races to the puck, to loose pucks. That's how they got their first goal. Kid kind of chips the puck in, gets past a defenseman, and puts a shot between Briggs's leg pad and the post. I think Briggs maybe was leaning the other way and thought he was going to pass, but still, I mean, it was just a case of their third and fourth lines, I thought. In fact, I almost put one of their guys on the all-tournament ballot just because I was so impressed with how he was always around the puck when things were happening. He was out on the ice.
You going to share his name? Pump his tire on the Inch podcast?
I am trying to think, and I can't I can't remember his name right now. I think it's...
remember his sweater number?
I'm going to get my media guide out. Hold on a second. I got one. I picked up an Air Force media guide this weekend. One of the guys
also,
was Fairchild. He was the fourth liner. I think he had two assists. Give me a second. I'll look up his name. Go ahead. Talk.
All right. I'll take this time to mention that all four of Massachusetts' fourth lines were very good. Also.
Yeah, well, they were better. They were better than your Clarkson line this weekend. Glad you weren't there.
Yeah, that's right. They did their job.
Jeff Hayner.
I wanted to commend you. Oh, wow.
Jeff Hayner.
I wanted to...
By the way.
Jeff Finger?
Hayner.
Hayner.
It's H-A-J-N-E-R. Pronounced Hayner. From Las Vegas.
Did I catch a Hayner in there?
You did.
Las Vegas?
He's a forward from Las Vegas. By way of the Melfort Mustangs of the Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League.
Nice.
Plus, I wanted to commend you on having the foresight to bring your Air Force media guide with you to St. Louis. I mean, who would have known you'd even need it?
Well, I went straight from Denver.
You had it with you. Smart.
Yeah.
I mean, that's thinking. You know, that's what you get from Inch. We think ahead.
I needed something to read on the plane, so.
When the Inch team flight left Denver, you stayed behind?
Yeah, I did. I was waiting for an offer from National Geographic and it fell through.
For those who didn't get the reference, Jack Johnson, to no surprise of anyone, has left the Michigan hockey program, or more accurately, they left him in Denver so he could negotiate with the Los Angeles Kings.
And speaking of the Los Angeles Kings, if we were to listen to Barry Melrose this weekend, Brian Boyle will win 17 Norris trophies in the next 12 years. Boyle's a great player, absolutely great player, but that was a little over the top.
Well, he's been playing defense for six games.
Since we're talking about future NHLers, I was just noting that the St. Louis Blues have three home games this week. What are the odds that Eric Johnson will play a game in St. Louis before anybody from North Dakota does?
There's a chance. Strong chance.
There's always a chance. That's a good question. But I don't know. I don't want to address those guys right now.
A quick check of the Inch States of the Game feature shows that Hayner is one of three Nevada natives to play Division I men's college hockey. Does not list the other two.
In fact,
Nebraska-Omaha had one when we did that 5 years ago.
Yes, they did. Micah Sanford, I believe, is his name.
Yeah, there you go. You could remember that, but you couldn't remember the guy you wanted to put on the all-tournament team.
Yeah, I couldn't.
Yesterday.
I know.
He's got one of those memories.
Remember that? Remember the guy on that Saturday Night Live skit of Mr. Short-Term Memory Loss? That was me. Anyways.
Gotcha.
In fact, Air Force's first goal, it was Jeff Hayner scored it on Saturday on an assist from Matt Fairchild. It was Las Vegas, Nevada from on an assist from Ashburn, Virginia.
Nice. The Ashburn Extreme.
Home of the Ashburn Extreme, run by our old friend Jeff Nygaard, who was the former SID at North Dakota. Connections everywhere.
That's a powerhouse. Probably the person who inspired a napkin recently from Sterling, Virginia, is probably an Ashburn Extreme fan.
Everything extreme in Ashburn.
That's what it says on the bumper stickers.
How, Rook, you're quiet. You having another? Are you having? Are you in your Eastern League keeper draft right now?
Yeah. Just
careful on the Binghamton Mets. I guess there's ownership issues.
Glad he wants you to pick some Clarkson guys.
I would, but they're all gone.
I heard you're trying to master the gyro ball. Is that true?
No, there's only one human on the planet who can throw that.
Yeah.
Just ask. There was a great quote from
I think they're called heroes.
There was a great quote from Adam Dunn today in the post-game press conference after the Red Sox lost to the Reds in spring training. But, you know, Daisuke pitched 5 no-hit innings, and Dunn said, yeah, well, I don't know if he really had his best stuff today. Wait, I can't say that because I've never seen him before. So, yeah, he was pretty good. But I wasn't at that game today. But I figured since I heard the quotes, I can slap them on a story and throw a Dateline there and post it, right?
All from St. Louis.
Yeah, because saying you're someplace and not actually being there, that would be wrong.
Yeah. Yep. Podcast deterioration. Welcome aboard.
Who could stand for such publicity? There's no place for that. There's no place for that in journalism.
I saw a National Hockey League game last week.
What'd you see?
It's good. Buffalo Sabres, Washington Capitals.
That Drew Stafford might have a future.
Stafford's good, as first introduced to you on A to Z. By Inside College Hockey, Jess Myers.
Second or third introduction, but
yeah.
You're on a handshake.
He was introduced.
Yeah.
He was introduced. He was good. He was better than Ovechkin that night, that's for sure.
Yes, he was.
And his goal was a top play. One of his goals. Yeah, it was top play of something. One of those television things that
top play of something
lists top plays of such sorts of
proud moment of his career.
Yeah. So anything else, we'll have another Inch podcast either later this week and certainly before most of our listeners arrive in St. Louis here with us. For your listening pleasure,
I think,
on the
we'll
planes,
we'll be,
trains, and automobiles.
We'll be live at Mike Shannon's sometime this week.
Mike Shannon, he's a left shot, right?
No, you know, the steak restaurant. Former Cardinal, Mike Shannon, broadcaster.
Oh, I thought this was a Neil Koepke.
No, he's got a steak place.
Call.
Here.
I was partying with some Mike Shannon fans.
Partying with some what fans?
He'll be partying with Cards fans soon.
Yes.
Yes, he will.
And Spartan fans. And Black Bear fans. And Fighting Sioux fans.
Yeah.
And Eagles fans.
As
Jeff,
we all
I,
Allegedly.
Jeff, I mentioned this to you last week, but, you know, thinking Hockey East, I just hope Boston College fans don't follow the lead of one of their former heroes, Kevin Stevens, and spend too much time in East St. Louis, because we know that can be trouble.
Well, you can spot the Boston College fans pretty easily. They all wear bright yellow T-shirts and yell at everybody about how they go to Boston College. So,
I thought their fight song was kind of Nancy.
Hey, I don't know who did. You know who did put together a great remix or a cover, if you will, of their fight song was the Dropkick Murphys, who you guys will be hearing plenty of in St. Louis this week, along with the Spandells and their wonderful rendition of Dirty Water.
Dirty Water!
Say Dirty Water without any
R's. Dirty Water without any R's. Hey, while we're at it, guys, let's slap a dateline on this podcast, too.
St. Louis, Missouri.
Darfur.
There it is.
Darfur.
St. Louis, Missouri. Thank you all very much.
Did you bring in Baldwin?
Baldwin was in Worcester, or Manchester.
Worcester. Awfully lonely. Awfully lonely that bird was in Worcester.
It's really the same city.
The bird got there a year early? Wow. Dedication. They did a site visit.
Had to build a nest.
Caw.
Welcome to Animal Corner, a new feature on our podcast.
Hey, by
anything else, boys, for the deterioration?
UMass and Miami, first two NCAA tournament wins this week. Huntsville nearly got theirs.
As did Air
St.
Force.
St. Cloud did not come close to getting theirs. St. Cloud, for the first time ever, had a lead in an NCAA tournament game. So
hey, I was going to make...
Baby steps.
I was
scratching off the to-do list.
I was going to make a point. St. Cloud State fans, they deserve everything that they get for this El Foldo this year, because good God, I mean, that's
what they do to you. Jeez, wow.
I'm just saying, the St. Cloud State fans always complain, well, we don't get any respect. Well, you know, you get to the regional and you soil yourself, for God's sakes. I mean,
well, they got outplayed by Jess's University of Myers Duluth, and then they lost twice in the Final Five. And then they lost to Maine. So,
wow.
I mean, it wasn't a one-game thing. I mean, it's been going on for 3 weeks.
No, I know that, but that's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying. I'm not saying that.
Great. And I'm backing you up, man. I
know.
You.
And you were in. You're a Husky guy.
My Husky.
And he's not
great.
Calling you fat.
On one of the Gopher fan message boards, there's a great taunt that this guy has as a tagline every time he writes something. His tagline is, all-time NCAA tournament wins, Niagara, 1, Holy Cross, 1, St. Cloud State, 0. Hey, numbers don't lie.
Isn't putting Holy Cross 1 on there...
Yeah, I don't think Gopher fans should be using that.
Yeah,
no
kidding. Niagara.
It happened.
I don't have a
It's
quote.
History. You can't take it away.
No, but still.
Well, no, you can put Miami and UMass up there, too. Congratulations.
That is true.
Yes.
Congrats to those teams. Anything else? Deterioration, boys? Anything?
Yeah, you know what? I have to share this. Driving to the game yesterday... down I-70 in Denver. It was a beautiful day in Denver yesterday, by the way. It was, as opposed to Saturday where it was like 30 and rainy, it was about 68, sunny. Great day. I see some yokel on this dirt bike type thing, crotch rocket, riding a wheelie down the freeway for like a half mile. I'm not making this up. weaving in and out of traffic, riding a wheelie.
That's a seen and heard.
It should have been.
But now it's a podcast heard only.
Yes. You should have seen it. Because it was, I mean, who rides it? First of all, well, I won't get into it, but.
oh, we're into it.
Gotten into it.
Oh, I'm just saying. Well, motorcycles are dangerous enough, but to ride a wheelie down the freeway.
Was this person wearing a helmet?
Unfortunately, yes.
Well, okay, so.
Was it Ben Roethlisberger? Oh, no, he was.
No way! Ben Roethlisberger would like to send his congratulations to Miami University on their hockey win, and also remind everyone to wear their seatbelts.
Arrive alive. Was it Ben?
Rick just made all our Robert Morris listeners cringe.
Yeah.
And Dylan Reese.
And Jason Williams.
Oh, man.
What are you talking about?
Hey, he went to Duke.
Jason Williams, the dude who tipped his
butt. Oh, I thought you were talking about the Jason Williams that shot the dude in his house or whatever.
No. What's the college basketball guy in the offseason?
That wiped out on his motor scooter or whatever it was.
No, that was like a Kellen Winslow. Didn't he lay down his motorcycle?
Oh, Kellen Winslow, that's the other one.
Kellen Winslow, there's another one.
Braves, former Braves outfielder Ron Gant was set to go into his free agent year and had his motorcycle fall on top of him. didn't turn into a lucrative free agent contract with a broken leg.
Didn't Jeff Gant do that too?
I don't know.
Tony Twist's NHL career ended that way. I think it was a motorcycle accident. We'll probably see him here this week in St. Louis. So I know
he's not on the team anymore?
No. No, he's a front. He's a team ambassador, I'm sure.
Lee Stempniak is on the team.
Yeah.
He's good. Good at hockey.
Peter Sain is on the team. Former Hobie winner.
Good at hockey also.
David Backes, former Minnesota State Maverick, playing well for the St. Louis Blues.
Yeah, that's a team that I think, you know, Pittsburgh gets a lot of credit, and they do have a lot of talented young guys, but... You know, if you were a hockey fan in a market and you're going to be watching a team for the next 10, 15 years and grabbing season tickets, if you're stuck in St. Louis with that option, I don't think it's a bad idea. You know, it's not a bad break. They're going to be good, and they're going to be young and fun.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree.
You know, and you hear a lot of teams and fans of teams in Eastern major markets saying, we keep getting the same guys and we keep sucking. I don't think that's the case with St. Louis.
They need a goalie.
That's the case with the Boston Bruins.
Yeah, every Boston team sucks, though.
Hey, you watch your mouth.
You watch your mouth, Paul Pierce said.
Hey, you
wonder what Tom Brady's
Paul
doing
Pierce
right now.
Seven times, and he'll be back in 3 weeks.
Wonder what Tom Brady's doing right now.
Oh, geez. Hopefully he's not having another.
You say what or who?
Going to two different Lamaze classes.
Hi, I'm interested in this cloning thing. Can you like make another one of these?
He's teaching Matt Castle how to change diapers.
What else?
There's got to be something.
College basketball Final Four, fantastic. Everyone loves that thing.
Who is in it?
Let's forget about that.
Ohio State was in. That's all I think I know. Kansas
UCLA?
Disney. Oh, UCLA. I saw the
Georgetown
thing.
Yeah, how about baseball opening week, right?
How about North Carolina?
Fredonia.
The opening league of baseball I heard about.
Georgetown and Florida.
Florida. Did you say Fredonia?
Yeah.
Fredonia is in the Final Four. Wow.
Nice.
I'm locked in. I'm still locked in on D3 Hockey Mania.
Rook, how come you don't want to talk about North Carolina and Georgetown?
Oh, because baseball season opens up on Sunday.
And, who's your utility outfielder for your fantasy team?
Oh, man, I got so many.
Who don't That's I great. Have?
I got so many players. They start on that September 1st 40-man roster deal.
The right answer is Dave Roberts.
Dave Roberts is the greatest utility outfielder in the history of human beings.
He runs the bases better than Lonnie Smith.
And Sid Breen.
No, Sid runs great.
He legged out that.
Scored from second on a pop fly to right and left field.
Yeah, just ask Barry Bonds.
Yeah, I went by the Metrodome recently, and Lonnie Smith was still standing at second. I don't know what he was there for. we were glad to have him there.
Kent Herbeck was tackling Ron Gant, too.
Oh, that was the worst. That was the worst.
Yeah. I thought it looked all right, but...
That was awful. I am a Twins fan, and that's awful. That was
I was like, what is going on here?
He should have just stuck his foot out and tripped it. It's the same thing.
I was expecting Andy Van Hellman to come down the right field line to where it's looking. But it didn't happen.
Otis Nixon reference.
Yeah, just Otis Nixon. That's
yeah,
all.
Otis Nixon. His hands.
If Otis Nixon wasn't suspended for that 91 playoffs, Lonnie Smith probably wouldn't have been in the lineup. That is a fact.
Ifs and buts.
Are Otis Nixon and Trot Nixon related?
Don't you slander Trot Nixon like that.
And Dick Nixon? I mean, is it all one big family?
Yeah.
I can't mention Otis Nixon without bringing up Willie McGee, the two ugliest men in baseball.
Derek Bell takes offense that he was not included in that conversation.
we should have an all-ugly team. That would be a good napkin.
Oh, yeah.
Ugliest players in sports.
Ugliest ECAC Hockey League writer from Inside College Hockey. Nice, I won.
Hey, you've done enough winning over the last couple of weeks. Come on, leave some for the rest of us.
Whatever.
This is your first podcast back since your triumphant return. Is that correct?
That is true.
Take a bow. Oswego State Lakers, and I saw Al Roker mentioned it last week.
Yes, he did.
I saw that.
He did.
You were at the D3s. I just thought we had to suspend you for a week. I didn't know.
Yeah, it goes back to that word you can't say.
the iTunes commissioner called and handed out a suspension.
Violation of team rules.
He was rolling with Pac-Man Jones.
Too bad you don't play the WCHA. We would have had you back last week.
Yeah, you wouldn't have missed any time.
I was going to put the applause on for our sound effect, but I can't find it. I thought we had one. We don't have it.
What is that? That's more like it.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, you know what?
Was that Robbie Bina driving that car?
I always enjoy a good.
Hopefully it wasn't Tony La Russa.
Oh, man.
For you to say that in St. Louis, take some nerve.
Wow.
And his car wasn't moving.
There was a bar. Inch is always a fan of sending the people out to our favorite establishments when they're on the road. If you're ever in Duluth, Minnesota, and I know you're there, Jess.
Not now. Cool. Now I'm in St. Louis, but...
Well, you're there, I'm saying, at times.
So when I'm in St. Louis County, you're saying this is where I should be.
Ah, okay.
Duluth's in St. Louis County?
Aha.
St. Louis County, that's right.
Yes, it is. Oh,
that's cool.
And the body of water between Duluth and Superior is known as St. Louis Bay. So
There you go. Podcast fact.
Podcast fact, yeah.
There's a bar called Norman's. It used to be called Norman's. It's not called Norman's anymore. It's called Aces on First. And the people of Aces were very kind. And the waitresses of Aces on First were very hot.
you're not pulling any punches.
No. I mean, they were absolutely stunningly gorgeous.
You saw the roots, Gladdy. You saw the incubator, if you will, of the UMD penalty box and all they came to represent, their one shining year that they came to Boston. So now you understand a little bit where it all comes
Jess,
from.
I think we went over this before. Hey, Gladdy, remember Boston? No.
Hey, Nate, remember Boston?
Not at all.
Nate, can I credit you for having the best text message that I received last week?
Uh-oh. I don't want to know. Do I want to know what this was?
After the game in Carolina? No.
Well, I don't remember it.
I'll refresh you. Nate's employer, a hockey team that plays in the Capital District, had 10 shots on goal in a game at Carolina. So after the game, I saw the box score. I texted Nate a message. I put 10 shots with a question mark, and Nate's reply was, "I'm going to try to double that tonight."
Nate was on fire that night. His other great one was... Former Michigan State defenseman Andrew Hutchinson, a seventh defenseman, so to speak.
Oh, come on. Don't take a shot at Hutch on the podcast.
I'm not taking a shot at Hutch. I love Hutch. He's a lot better than that clown for Colorado.
Oh, shut up.
I'll take a shot at that guy.
Which guy?
Minnie or whoever he is. I don't know.
Who?
Wearing Rob Blake's number.
Oh.
Good times. I guess he did change his uniform number.
Yeah, he did the 4. He's wearing 4 now.
Unbelievable.
Stastny's
20. He's better than Rob Blake. He can do more things than Rob Blake.
He can do more things than Bobby Orr. maybe he'll get to play with Brian Boyle in a Western Conference All-Star game someday. Anyway, Hutch was scratched, and it was good. I won't go there.
Hutch was scratched. Somebody, maybe an NHL type should listen to this. Give Hutch a chance.
Give Hutch a chance. That'll be our campaign pledge in St. Louis.
When you said a Capital District hockey team, I thought you were talking about the Albany River Rats.
Yeah, Rensselaer or something.
Rensselaer Engineers. Puckman. Where is Puckman these days?
I saw him. Chilling. He's here.
He's chilling in the bucket in the penalty box. Just chilling.
Wrap it up.
Thanks for you guys. Welcome to St. Louis, and we look forward to everyone else coming along soon. So we'll talk to you soon. And we'll have another Inch podcast for you certainly within the next week. Thank you very much for listening.